Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No One Normal, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy at Revive, and I'm excited to welcome our guest today, Ben Fuqua, Senior Vice President of Analytics at Revive. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited. And also with Ben is Tyler Lowry, marketing technologist at Revive. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, Chris. How are you? It's an analytics takeover today.
Oh, my gosh. I'm ready for it. You got to bring it. On this week's episode, we're going to be recapping the Vive conference that Ben and Tyler are fresh off of. So I'm super excited and can't wait to jump into that, but do want to hit a few headlines. And one of the biggest ones that I've been watching and that, of course, caught my eye today was the action, the Texas ruling court action that calls into question many of the potential preventative benefits that are part of the Affordable Care Act. And I was just, I know this is going to take a long time to wind its way around court, but I was thinking about as healthcare marketers, as healthcare organizations, what that means for us, but also as healthcare marketers, who are really kind of actively trying to engage people to take advantage of that preventative care. So it really kind of, and knowing that we do a lot of work to try and drive activity around some of that preventative care, boy, it just kind of struck a knife right in my heart. Ben, Tyler, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think for me, we end up working with a lot of different health systems, and their focus is in creating, you know, that well patient. There's always that balance of, am I trying to drive revenue? Am I trying to capitalize on my profits? Or am I trying to create a well and healthy patient base in my, you know, within my market? I think anything that takes away from the ability to maintain people's wellness is the wrong direction to go. I'd much rather see those sorts of offerings continue to be promoted, supported. And this kind of legislation kind of flies in the face of that to me.
Yeah.
That's my perspective.
And adding on to that, one of the things that we saw at the Vive conference was the use of AI as far as tracking users and their ongoing wellness in an effort to target people for continuing wellness. So really taking advantage and, you know, looking at preventative care as a means by which to head off those potential emergency room visits. So it's concerning, to say the least.
Yeah. You know, that's a good call out, Tyler. We saw a lot of different companies that were focused on, you know, helping the consumer, helping the patient manage their own healthcare. And it actually came up as part of the topic that, you know, patients in today's cost structure, the healthcare practitioners are overwhelmed. They're actually looking for patients to take on more of that ownership of their wellness using all of the connected devices that we see available through, you know, the retail market. So pay attention to what your watch is telling you. Pay attention to the remote patient monitoring systems that you can, you know, monitor yourself with, and then you act on your own, you know, best interest. So I think that's going to be part of that solution over time. And because healthcare practitioners just can't keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting. So anything else from the headlines that are striking you? And, you know, again, I know you're excited to talk about Vive. It could be kind of a combination of things that you saw there, but also any recent headlines that might have stuck out to you.
Yeah, two that really stuck out to me then, and one of them actually was, I believe, announced at Vive, was Amazon is made a deal that they're now working directly with drug companies in an effort to offer couponing right there at the point of purchase of drugs. I mean, I think that this is a big change and big shift. In that discussion, there was a statistic mentioned that of the percentage of people that actually leverage couponing as a means by which when to save some money when you're paying cash for drugs, I think only 15% of them are actually redeemed, which I think is surprisingly low, but at the same time, there's a lot of difficulty. Amazon's big aim for this is to not only give price transparency. So as we take a look at drugs and out-of-pocket costs, and trying to save money, we see that as Amazon trying to get ahead of it. And again, I think that this is another nice piece to round out Amazon's recent push into the healthcare space in general. which is to offer those clinical visits, then have your drug purchases right there within Amazon. So there was that one. And the other one I saw was the latest trend in some of the ChatGPT. This was kind of an underlying theme that was mentioned by various presenters at Vive. And we saw in the news yesterday that there was actually a ruling and an actual complaint filed by the Federal Trade Commission related to ChatGPT, as far as it being potentially unfair in some of its practices. So all things ChatGPT continue to be discussed, and we see them being used in lots of different ways. But it'll be interesting to see as we take a look in the future what types of rulings and societal impacts and questions that are raised that come along with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's hot. I think, as you guys were telling me, as we were talking a little bit about Vive and sharing your experience, it's kind of top of mind for everybody, not just in healthcare, but our society in general. So it'll be an interesting one to watch for sure. I think your comment about the couponing was interesting. For the very first time as a consumer, I actually tried to use a coupon and did, but it was kind of a wonky experience. It was I was prescribed a dermatology cream that was like insanely expensive. And the pharmacist actually made me aware of it. And, but you know, the whole thing of, well, you know, am I going to qualify for this? How much is it going to cost? I mean, I think there's some interesting ideas about not only how it gets the foot, you know, their foot further into healthcare, but also kind of medication adherence, what it means to actually benefit populations. I mean, I think there's some interesting things there. So, as always, the tech world is taking our society and also healthcare by storm.
And, you know, more broadly than ChatGPT, which I don't know why no one spoke about GPT-4 and it dropping. We didn't hear that at the conference this week, but there was a push yesterday by industry leaders to start to put the brakes on the use of artificial intelligence. So I immediately think about, you know, what could go wrong? Skynet, Cyberdyne. Yeah, those are cultural references, right? But the end point, without a governed set of rules, policies surrounding when you can and can't use things like generative AI, they can go really wrong really fast. I think society has a history of not managing science very clearly with certain restrictions in place. And those can turn out poorly. So I kind of like the idea of having those kinds of standards, governances being put in place.
Yeah, for sure. It's a marathon, not a sprint, right? Okay, so let's switch gears. So the first time I ever heard about Vive, the word, was just a couple of weeks ago when I learned that you guys were going there. So tell me, what is Vive? What is it all about?
So my take on Vive is it's a technically focused conference for healthcare specifically. New tech being developed to connect data, new tech being developed to put in place solutions, artificial intelligence focused solutions that address specific problems in healthcare. So there were a number of different vendors there representing everything from data connectivity to outbound contact management to governance to security to smaller startups with AI capabilities. The conference in general had about 7,600 people that were there. That was a count I saw. It was held at the Music City Center in Nashville, which is convenient to our office, right? So it's an easy walk over, and ran for 3 days. And it was a very social, very structured event, starting 8 o'clock in the morning, running till 9:30 at night, with all sorts of breaks for us to be able to interact with the various vendors, be able to attend sessions. And the sessions spanned everything from interoperability to very specific point solutions on a problem that AI can solve.
Yeah. Wow. That seems like pretty, pretty broad, kind of far-reaching health tech topics. Who are the people that were attending this outside of a lot of the health tech companies?
So the audience that I saw, there were a lot of startup companies that were coming in. There were a lot of like CIOs and heads of digital transformation, chief digital officers, some IT-oriented, strategy-oriented folks that are kind of getting a sense of what the lay of the land could look like in the future. And a lot of it was very future-focused and future-oriented.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's a pretty amazing place to be for a few days. So tell me about it. What are some of your highest level takeaways coming out of the conference? What were the biggest impressions that you were left with that particularly our listeners would want to hear about?
So I think for me, thinking about the future of health tech, there was so much conversation about the way that it evolves over time and the way that it can evolve in a responsible manner to support the healthcare practitioners that are in the trenches every day. So people that are able to pick up and use technology, they have to make any new technology that gets rolled into a healthcare practitioner's workflow right now has to be seamless. It has to just fit. It can't take additional time. It can't require a lot of training. So I think we heard that kind of takeaway. We heard a lot about making sure that health equity is represented in the way that tools and the way that practices and technology are used responsibly so that we kind of keep a level playing field and balance the way that those inequities have historically been present and acknowledging that presence and then intentionally removing it going forward. And specifically in some of the algorithms and AI concepts that were developed. And then again, that point about making sure the technology fits the workforce needs. I can't emphasize that enough. You can have the best idea in the world and there's all sorts of great ideas there, but if they don't fit the workflow and fit what the practitioners need and save them time, not require more time, there's no place for it in today's healthcare delivery. There's no place, there's no room, there's no time, they're understaffed. It has to make up for lost staffing.
Okay. Wow. There's a lot there. Let's take a minute to unpack that before we start kind of, you know, diving into some of these a little bit more. Tell me about that technology fit, lots of pieces and parts. And it's something that healthcare has struggled with for a long time, right? Point solutions for everything. Tell me a little bit more about what the discussion was around all of that.
Ooh, there's a lot. A couple things that stick out. One, which is, you know, kind of what Ben had talked about, which is the use of technology and how it fits into things. The one thing that I took away with it is there, you know, everybody was acknowledging the elephant in the room, that you have people that are in burnout. You have people that are having issues just getting their job done, spending 30% of their day just trying to get things filled out, paperwork filled out, things like that. It was interesting to see when we talk technology and how it fits in. There was a discussion again about the working in a human-centered journey. Again, interoperability, the ability to use technology to make the patient experience better. There was a lot of criticism and self-admittedness to old technology that needs to be augmented, removed, updated. I didn't hear, and maybe Ben, you may have heard otherwise. I didn't hear specifics on this is what you have to do to change or update technology to make it fit. There was a lot of, here's how we're going to fundamentally change and add to your system. So again, there was some discussion about connectivity from API connections and things like that and how that seamlessly works again into it. But there was more, for me, there was more of a discussion on the technology as a means to produce data in a general sense and tie that data together in a larger format to be able to make a better patient experience.
Okay. So kind of threading it together, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah. Chris, you and I have talked about data silos for a long time, right? The challenge of stitching together the data across the silos to make sense and meaning out of it. And we come at it from a couple of different perspectives. The as a marketing agency, we're looking for what can we learn about the consumer experience, how do we leverage various data elements to help us better understand and then by virtue of that, offer and improve something that's better. The word that I heard that captures all of that is interoperability. The idea that those silos have connections between them and there are standards and governance that help us take data from one place, move it to another place and leverage it without having to do transformations and constant data quality management. So that kind of idea, that undergirding of the entirety of the piping, the plumbing underneath those silos and making sure that it's good quality and is transferable and usable in different use cases, different business actions was a key part of that whole discussion about making technology work. So there's, you know, a lot of discussions about APIs versus extracts. And I think any of the vendors are trying to tap into that. Do we have the API connection to make it work, to make it seamless, right? Seamless, interoperable. I think that was a key theme. And the players I think that'll be successful are the ones that do have that kind of collaborative concept, that interoperability concept at the core of the solutions that they're developing.
So let me ask you this, is it getting easier? Is it just getting harder? Because there's so much more, there's so many more data elements and data pieces and point solutions. What do you get a sense of?
Yeah, the conversations actually took me back to something that the guys that I worked with at HCA used to focus on, and that was all of the evolving standards. There are national groups that are focused on creating those standards within the government, and then they're creating the stick and carrot method to incent the use and adoption of those kinds of standards. FHIR, HL7 kinds of data structures and compatibility requirements kind of came back to me at that point, because it is fundamentally that undergirding that has to exist. I heard those repeated by vendors. I heard them in the presentation of their products and in the ways that they talk about creating that connection. At the same time, Bobby Frist got up and spoke on the last day, and he talked about how you simplify the value prop of a company that you're starting up. So focus on a problem that's very specific, talk very clearly about it, clearly define your audience, and go forward with that product. I don't know that always lends itself to interoperability across a larger platform. And this is a group of startups, right? So these are guys that are, you know, carving out a place for themselves in the ecosystem.
Cool. Yeah. So it's so fascinating. You know, the smarter we get and the more opportunity we have, you know, the harder sometimes it is to kind of tie things together to really make sense of it all. But I mean, I think, you know, we're certainly making strides with the technology advances.
Yeah.
Cool.
One thing that kind of stuck out as well to that was, you know, in the wrangling of data and kind of answering your previous question around, you know, you think this will get easier or more difficult. There was a lot of discussion about AI as its means by which to wrangle data and make sense of large disparate data systems. It'll be interesting to see whether or not that really does kind of overlaying with some of the underlying infrastructure they're talking about with tying data together, whether or not that in the end makes things easier or whether or not we just now have another set of complexities to deal with. So,
yeah. You know, so kind of along those lines, complexity, Ben, you also mentioned a thread around our staff is done, right? Mm-hmm. That the solutions that we need to provide can't make things more complex for our staff. Talk a little bit about that and some of the pains we're experiencing in our industry as it relates to just our overall level of staffing burnout.
Sure. We all saw research last week that said 50% of the hospitals in the United States are not making profit at this point, right? And part of the reason that they're not is that, and we see this across our clients, they don't have access. They don't have the ability to get a patient in the door. Why not? The building's still there, right? It's the appointment availability and the nursing staff shortages that are creating that kind of access challenge. So You have a financial situation that's created by the lack of available healthcare practitioners to take care of a patient population. And if we look at the demographics in the United States right now, at a time where we have a fairly substantial aging population that requires those kinds of services, right? In that situation, I think it was very clear from the practitioner side, from the physician side, from the provider side, that as technology tries to improve the condition, the workflows, the decision making that's being made, that those things have to be seamless to the current practitioner's workflow. It cannot add the 5 minutes that Tyler described. There was some blowback on, you know, the meaningful use criteria, their implementation requirements for EHR connectivity. that spun up and drove a lot of that foundational data capture to begin with, but it's created a detriment on the actual care side. So we heard, you know, it's important for new technology. Don't take more time, save time, fit within existing workflow. Don't make practitioners or even patients fill out the same data over and over and over and over. And there were all sorts of ideas around how you could reduce those kinds of redundancies in the workflow.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be just such a key thing that is going to be a barrier for any new technologies trying to get into the healthcare landscape is making sure that additive benefit doesn't come at additive activity on the behalf of our practitioners.
It kind of went one step further too, Chris, when they talk about the, you know, we simply don't have any more time. We simply don't have enough nursing staff to keep up with the data entry side of things to get to that end benefit that all these great tools can offer. I heard something new that I hadn't really heard before, and that was, well, the patient needs to start taking some responsibility here. And that came out of some employer presentations where, you know, employers are getting hit with a 5% increase again this year. I remember setting up employee programs 10 years ago and what they cost there and seeing the incremental 30% increases year over year. Employers can't pay for it anymore. So they start trying to figure out where can we, you know, save time. And the health systems are coming back and saying, well, the employee can start to do things on their own if we give them access to, and the technical advances from retail are providing them tools to be able to monitor and manage their own health. So some of the systems are thinking, how do I get the patient, the consumer, to start taking responsibility for their own care to reduce the burden on the practitioner side?
Yeah, well, it makes sense, right? And a lot of consumers, I mean, as we know from our perspective and, you know, some of the things we've talked about in Joe Public 2030, you know, the Copernican consumer, there's a lot of consumers who are willing to sign up for that. They want to be, you know, an active participant in their own health.
Just don't make me sign up to have my driving habits monitored in order to get a reduction on my car insurance.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm not I'm not doing that either. So you mentioned there were a couple other things that Tyler, you mentioned, Ben, you mentioned the human-centered journey piece. Tyler, dig into that a little bit more. What's different about that? We've always said, hey, we have to have better technology. It's got to be more human-centered. It kind of ties to what Ben's talking about, right? How do those things kind of work together to make it easier for consumers to really manage their own health?
Absolutely. And, you know, Ben hit the nail on the head, you know, the idea of helping lower costs for insurance by empowering the end user to, you know, make their own decisions. This kind of goes back to the beginning of, you know, CVS making the announcement a couple of years ago saying, we're going to empower the consumer by giving them more, you know, we're going to give their healthcare visit more of a retail type experience where they can go into the store, they can have their point of health. You know, you look at Amazon, the way in which it's now empowering you to be able to go in and make telehealth visit, shop for your own medication, get your discounts on your drugs. You know, looking, you know, retail very much so has always been about the end user and the patient-centered, you know, patient-centered retail person, what have you. But, you know, as we take a look at these new technologies and empowering and kind of giving people a retail-esque type experience with their healthcare, you know, we take a look. These technologies are kind of looking inwards. And again, they're saving time. They're saving money on the ability to offload, as Ben referenced, kind of offload some of that information that you're making that you would otherwise make a nurse input. You're allowing people through technology to go in and do it themselves. So, you know, it's the idea of leveraging this technology to kind of look inwards and allow kind of the Copernicus consumer, allow the end user to make these decisions on their healthcare.
Yeah, cool. So, sorry, go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, in that dimension, we heard several presentations about digital transformation and the way that some of the larger systems, integrated delivery networks, are thinking about digital transformation. And that idea of putting the patient at the center of the process carried over to putting the physician. It's almost like putting the actor. Who's the actor in the use case that we're talking about? But putting them at the center of the solution design and focus, so that in some cases the solution is designed around the patient and this is what the patient's doing, almost like our engagement planning, Chris, when we're trying to think about that moment, what's the moment the person's in, what are they trying to do, and how do I best enable that to happen? So mm-hmm. that kind of thought process, but propagated across not just the patient, the nurse, the physician, the administrator. Yeah. And some of the digital transformation comments acknowledged when we first started digital transformation, we started from the back office concept of here's how health systems work, here's the processes that we have to go through. And all they did was come in and automate that stuff. And now those efficiencies are kind of beaten out of the process. Now it's the idea was, let's redesign the processes. Don't just keep automating it because we've already done that. Mm-hmm. Let's redesign the process with those actors at the center of it intentionally. And we saw at least in one case where that digital transformation importance rose to such a level that the CSO, Chief Strategy Officer, had authority over IT and marketing and some clinical operations in order to push that digital transformation down. I have not seen that structure yet inside of another system at all. Yeah. And it was encouraging that they would take the importance of digital transformation and those actor-oriented roles to such a high level and then start to drive that down throughout the organization.
So, Ben, if I'm understanding it right, it's really like taking those individual personas, right? The consumer, the clinicians, varying levels of clinicians, et cetera, and kind of viewing digital transformation from that perspective rather than from an overall health system point of view.
Exactly. Not a digital front door, but a digital process supported by what you're trying to do at this particular moment in time. Yeah. Right. And that then being integrated through all of that infrastructure that we talked about earlier for the interoperability of it all.
Yeah. Wow.
It was pretty cool. That was the most exciting thing I think I saw, mm-hmm. was that kind of orientation.
Yeah. So, all right. You just answered the question I was going to ask, but maybe for Tyler, what was the biggest, I call them BSOs, right? What was the biggest bright, shiny object that got you thinking really differently? Clearly, Ben, that is pretty mind blowing actually, but Tyler, what was yours?
I'm very much in agreement with Ben. I attended the same discussion and I was it wasn't so much a bright, shiny object, but again, you know, as Ben mentioned it, the idea that you're now merging these different types of roles in a health system that traditionally were not, you know, ever really thought about, and changing the user experience so that, again, it is all about the end user first and you build the technologies out around them. Bright, shiny object, just from a technology point, there was a lot. Philips had one that really was just fantastic. It was an AI virtual, again, with the idea that it's all about the patient at the center of everything. It was an AI bot that would look and monitor in real time every single piece of what was going on in a patient room. So it had monitors that were looking down from the ceiling on how you're sleeping, how your heart rate's going, how, you know, all these different things about that. And then it was piping it directly back into the nurse's station. So again, at the end of the day, when we're talking about interoperability and merging all this data together to create a user-centered journey, the nurses had the ability to take a look at, you know, a 360-degree view, basically everything that you would get from short of the MRI, all in one tablet, which I think was just phenomenal. Again, kind of going back to Ben's point, it needs to be something that someone can pick up seamlessly. You can't have that a lot of change management to that, but it was cool. Did nobody mention price, which was funny, but I guess we were too new in that one, but that was mine.
So how much of this felt like, you know, like a auto show where you're seeing concept cars, you know, versus, you know, the blend of kind of, you know, reality and hope, kind of where was this? Was this, hey, look at our concept car and now it's going to take us 10 years to build? Was it, you know, see the vision for the future? Was it more, here's some practical things you can do? Was it a mix?
There were some that were actual practical in use. One of the examples was, I guess it was announced probably about a year ago, the University of Pennsylvania started to create with one of their new buildings that they just opened. They've gotten rid of all whiteboards in the hospital. that doesn't seem like a lot. However, when you think about it from the technology standpoint, everything that powers what would go onto that whiteboard, thinking about who the nurse is, what medications they've taken, all this stuff in real time, there was a couple of vendors there that were talking about some of the pieces that go into making that possible. So kind of the monitoring devices. When we think about the world where 45% of the population is wearing a smartwatch, you know, some of those more down-to-earth type devices, I think, were easily implemented. When we start taking a look at an AI to fully power an entire patient experience in a hospital, that's where we're kind of thinking more of the ethereal 5-10 years. But again, there's a lot of infrastructure and a lot of things to think about that have to change first within a health system to be able to just power that. I mean, you know, we were looking at the shiny tip of the iceberg per se, what goes into that bottom of the iceberg that, you know, no one sees, which is all the infrastructure alignment, all the, you know, as Ben mentioned, piping of data together to make it fit. That's what I think is the big hurdle for people.
Yeah. But it seems like a real big vision that perhaps is coming together in a different way than it ever has before. Right.
I would agree with that. There's a pretty broad spectrum of currently available, in development, aspirational vendors and ideas that were presented there. One in particular, Edmund Jackson, who was the chief data scientist at HCA, Chris, you may have met him when he was there, has spun out, started a company, and he's focused on doing listening. So listening to voice recognition and then doing artificial intelligence on top of that in order to detect issues with patients and consumers. So there were all spans of, and it was, you know, it was kind of playing with it. I'm playing with it. I want to explore this. So there was definitely that aspirational nature to some of the presenters that were there.
Cool. So one word coming out of this that makes you, what does this make you feel about the future of healthcare as we know it?
I think I'd rather drive one of those newly developed cars than take an AI system out for a spin. But there's a lot of power that's out there. And if it can be harnessed and improve the nature of the care, it can be fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. Again, how do you govern and how do you set up the standards and enforce and encourage that kind of collaboration across all of these unique ideas that are being bantered about and created? That's where I think we as a society win.
Yeah. Okay. So before we wrap it up, is there anything else that you want to tell us about the conference that we didn't discuss? Any other burning thing that was on your mind about being there the last few days?
I would say I was surprised by the international nature of the attendance. That I was not expecting, and not just Canada, but I met developers and database developers and code developers from all over the world. So that was kind of neat. I haven't seen that in healthcare so much here in Nashville.
Neat. Anything for you, Tyler?
I loved there's a little bit of a discussion. I only had a chance to go to one of them, but around the idea of techquity, which is a word that I had never really heard of before, which was the promise of digitization to democratize care access and more effectively address health disparities. So I think that the use of technology to tie data together for better equity, I loved hearing about that. I loved learning about that. So that was kind of one of the big takeaways that I had as well.
Did you see a lot of focus on solutions to kind of support that, or what was your?
There was actually a consortium around that helps monitor Techquity as well, which was, I believe, local to Nashville. That was great to hear. I caught the tail end of one of the discussions, and it was fantastic. And they had a survey for you to fill out if you wanted to join and discuss.
That might be worthy of a whole future No Normal episode.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. So, one last thing, you know, for next year, would you guys be interested in going again? And, you know, when it comes to our listeners, again, who's the type of folks that you would recommend checking the conference out?
I think I would go again. It's going to be in Los Angeles next year, I believe, Tyler.
Yep.
And then coming back to Nashville, I think in 2 years. The types of people I think that this would be of greatest benefit to are those that are exploring strategies surrounding the use of technology to improve healthcare operations, workflows, decision-making, whether it's clinical or more focused on operations itself. I think that's the right audience. And I would say there was a strong venture capital investment component, you know, latched into that as well. So if you're brainstorming a new idea, this is an audience to be around to kind of shake hands with, press palms with.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm completely agreeing with Ben. And I would just add on top of that, I think that going into it with an idea of a problem you're trying to solve for is very helpful. You know, there was so much information. I think that having an idea, having a general theme that you want to fix potentially or grow at a health system, I think is a great, great idea to kind of at least keep in the back of your mind so that you can kind of narrow down your focus of what you're trying to learn.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's super, super interesting. And let's just wrap another show. So thanks again for being here. Thank all of you for listening and joining in. If there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email. Also, make sure that you share the show with your friends and colleagues. Give us a review and rating on iTunes. All of that's appreciated. Until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. We'll see you next time. 3